अस्तु मा सद्गमय, तमसु मा ज्योतिर्गमय, मृत्योर्माम् अमृतं गमय। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, फ्रॉम द इग्नोरेंस ऑफ डार्कनेस or darkness of ignorance to light of knowledge, from the limited mortal existence to the unlimited immortality. Om peace, peace, peace. Dear friends, this is the fourth class on this beautiful book, and we saw last time that the real nature of love is in getting our ego, our separateness, thrashed, killed, eliminated, because love means oneness. There is the coming together in love means we sacrifice. What do we sacrifice? We dissolve our little egos into the universal self. So love is that. It is therefore not just pleasantries, as we saw in the last class, that it is, if we are afraid of this getting threshed, then get away from this threshing ground, as he says, that from the threshing ground just run away, cover your nakedness, as he says, and thus be in this world of divided existence, all jealousies, hatred, imperfections, and dissatisfactions. So this is how, if we want love, we should not be expecting that it is going to be all very pleasant. It leads to ultimate joy, because all joy actually lies in oneness. Even the minor joys that we think, there also it is the oneness that makes it possible. For example, even if, say, eating a cookie, Dylan there and cookie here, that is not pleasure or happiness. When that Dylan and cookie become one, then, hey, yes. So it lies in oneness. So therefore, as we learn to love, as we get our egos completely eliminated, it's a march. It is not that it will happen in a single day. But then if we decide that this is what is going to happen, then we will be mentally prepared for that. That yes, love means this is going to happen to me. It is losing the existence of oneself in the this ocean of existence. Sometimes some similar literature compares, therefore, that it is the moth that gets attracted to fire. Now it loves fire. Now if it goes to fire, what's going to happen is it is going to get burnt. It is not going to survive. But that is what its love is about, that it needs to be just eliminated. So this is how we see the elimination of ego, that separateness, which is that separateness, although it is matter of fact that we feel ourselves separate, but it is not matter of truth. Matter of fact is yes, because in our illusory these things, perceptions, we feel that we are different, and so it appears to be that yes, matter of fact, we are separate. But we, if we look at the truth, that separateness has no locus standi. Can you draw a line where you end and the world begins? It is impossible to draw such a line. Try as much as you can. But you will soon find that you cannot draw a line where I end and the world begins. And why cannot we draw a line? The reason is very simple. Because such a line objectively does not exist at all. There is no such division where I ends and the world begins. And thus it is not possible. And thus this separateness is not real. It is not true. So it is a fact of our perception. We feel each other separate. But yet, look at where we have our joys. It is in oneness. Where do we have our love? It is in oneness. So therefore, the truth that we need to march is towards this oneness. Now this prophet Al-Mustafa is asked to elaborate on something that is closely connected, at least in common perception, with love, and that is marriage. So Al-Mitra, the same person who asked him to first of all go, but tell us something tangible, something valuable, and then go. And then she asks, after asking about love, that, and what of marriage, Master? What of marriage? Now, marriage is a human institution that is for thousands and thousands of years of human social existence. Across all cultures and across all religions is there, this institution of marriage. It changes its forms. It changes the way people come together. It is various types are there. Some appear to be sanctioned by some established religions. Some do not find sanction of some religions. So it is, there is also a big variety, I mean. It is not, and across, if you see, historically they keep on shifting according to the needs of society also. It is like in some places, polygamy became necessary because a lot of men got killed in the wars and so forth. So there were a lot more women than men. And therefore, the ratio cannot be 1-to-1. In some cultures, there is the number of men is far more than that of women. So therefore, there this idea of polyandry thrived. It is, so therefore, it is not that one is moral, another is not moral. It depends on the social needs. The ratio of 1:1 is not always feasible, not always possible, depends on the social structures, the needs of society. But one thing is clear, that there is this idea of marriage, and this idea of marriage has therefore lot of meaning associated with it. And two people come together in a bond of love. Now there is that in two people there is this existence together. Now the two people, they have different bags with them. They are not same. Otherwise, there is no coming together also. They are different. Now, that difference is described here. It is very beautiful and very sublime, very poetic passage. And he answered saying, "You were born together, and together shall be forevermore. You shall be together when the white wings of death scatter your deeds. Yeah, you shall be together even in the silent memory of God. But let there be spaces between you. But let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of heaven dance between you." It is the togetherness, but there have to be spaces. It is not that the distinctions are lost. There is two persons are there. They have their very separate individualities, very different functions, different potentials, and so that those spaces in between have to be maintained. But it should be a joyous space, and therefore this statement is very beautiful. "And let the winds of heavens dance between you." Winds of heaven. See, heaven is a technical term. Heaven has, you know, very different meanings in different you know, type of literature. That some place, you know, it is a place of merriment that gets called as heaven. But in this tradition, it means that it is where God lives, where the place that is associated with the divine existence, that is heaven. So, therefore, let the divine, the winds of the divine, let that communicate between you. Let that be dance. The word dance, you know, it suggests joy. And that is how the joy in this life is. It is, unless we connect ourselves to each other through God, it is not likely that the marriage will have any happy or even kind of stable existence. There is always a discussion about how we can hold the families together, It has been, this question has been discussed for decades, that yes, there the family is there, but then there is strife within the family. And then sometimes it breaks, the family gets splintered. Why? And what should we do to keep the family together? Swami Akhilanandaji had given a lecture here long back. Akhilanandaji founded this Vedanta Society of Providence in 1928. And he gave one lecture about how the family also can be held together. It is in that togetherness we have to find the glue that holds things together. What is a glue that you use to bring two things together, to stick them together? The glue is a common thing. It holds both surfaces. So they are held together, the glue that gets into the pores of both surfaces and thus holds them together. Now, what is the glue that can go together, that can make the families stay together? One obvious thing in a marriage is the sexual drag. That yes, that is a need of being together to fulfill that drag. That is, but then that drag comes and goes. Again, it does not get fulfilled as such, because it only goes on increasing. It is, when I said it goes, means its expression becomes different, does not always have the same type of attraction, same type of feelings associated with it. But one thing you can see in common, that it is this so-called enjoyment, so-called coming together in sex, does not bring fulfillment automatically. Not that the desire is quenched, it increases. It is, and therefore that dissatisfaction sets in. And then there is the blaming of each other as an expression of that dissatisfaction. That, well, this person was not right, that person was not right. And the quarrels associated with them, they also set in. So, it is, we have to therefore see what is really the common glue that joins us together. If we hold on to that glue, then even the family can stick together. And that glue is God. There is only one glue, only one thing that is really permanently common in everything. Other desires, they rise, but they are not our true desires. We rush to fulfill them, go after the objects that we feel will remove that tension that is generated by that desire. But it does not go away permanently. Again and again, that desire keeps on coming increasingly. And therefore, it is sometimes said that, well, in the young age it is there, as one gets older it goes away. No, friends. When one gets old, it is only the instrument of body through which it expresses that becomes a bit that incapacitated or weak, and therefore you find that expression not coming out. But that doesn't mean that the desire is gone. The desire remains, but the instrument is not working, you see. So it is like, suppose one of these bulbs, it goes bad. Hopefully won't do it now, but suppose it goes bad, then that doesn't mean there is no electricity. Electricity that is powering it, it is there. The bulb has gone bad, that's all. So similarly, the desire remains, but the bulb of the body through which it functions, and that bulb is now defunct, that's all. It is. So therefore, we need to find out something which is truly connecting both. It is a matter of a lot of, you know, thought that what is the necessity of marriage. I would suggest you to read a beautiful chapter on that Sri Ramakrishna's biography. That chapter comes in that biography written by Swami Saradananda, Sri Ramakrishna and His Divine Play. And the title of that part chapter is, Why Did Sri Ramakrishna Marry? And there is a beautiful discussion on the very nature of marriage in human society. Human society, therefore, wants that it is to be given this opportunity to express in a constructive manner this drag. Even in the sexual drag, it is the underlying thing is becoming one. The two persons becoming one. Of course, in common sexual drag, that it never becomes one as such. Two things cannot really be made one. It is by bringing them physically together. In fact, the reverse thing happens, and that the two tried to become one, but in that attempt, from two they became three, four, five, like that. It is, it is not really that, it doesn't bring out that oneness ultimately. But if you see the underlying oneness, that yes, it is, the forms and the names, they are changing things. They are not ultimately real. If you take that out, then, of course, it is all one. So it is like that, that when you have the two things, externally you don't need to bring them together as such. They will not come together. They will, because they are two, they will not become one, even if you force them together. But if you see the underlying oneness, then it is already one. We have to transcend the shapes, the names. The example that I like is, just see the animal crackers. There are shapes, and according to the shapes you give the name, that this is a rabbit, this is an elephant, this is a deer, this is a lion, and so forth. Now find these names and given to those shapes, but the substance is the same, it tastes the same, and thus the grown-ups do not attach much importance to those. So when we spiritually grow up, we do not attach more importance to these things. So, this institution of marriage is to give a direction to feel the inner oneness more and more. And therefore it is important to have this institution. The forms will change according to the social needs and understanding and so forth. But the basic idea of marriage in human beings, it is not that they like some birds, the swans or some birds, they are eternally, they say, connected together for life. Once they are joined, then they are together for life. But that is not a conscious connection. It is a biological compulsion. It is in human beings, these vows are taken. Well, yes, we will be together for life. And it is also a belief in many religions, therefore, that the marriages have been already decided in heaven. Who is to marry whom has already been planned. It is, Sri Ramakrishna used to say that, well, other things you may have your will, but birth, death and marriage, these are the regions completely out of your control. So, it is, you get married, but really it has been decided, planned by somebody else. And then you carry that thing on because you take a vow, you make a commitment. Now, what is this commitment? When you make a commitment, then you try to hold on to it. You expected a lot of profit out of that commitment, but things did not work out that way, and then still you have made a commitment, so you have to fulfill the commitment. Even if you are making loss, there was one airliner, long back this happened, US Airways. Now that airliner is not separately existing, but what happened was, in the online buying, something went wrong with their websites. So many bought tickets during that time for $1. It was just a mistake. Long journeys, the ticket was bought at $1. So, and by the time, in a few minutes, they realized the mistake and then they stopped and corrected it. But in the meantime, many have bought the ticket and now it is a commitment and they honored the commitment. It is so important, therefore, a commitment, even though it is not going to bring any profit to you, you stick with it because you have made the commitment. So, now if the conditions under which the commitment is made, if those conditions change, then it is again a different thing. Because of those conditions, those vows that you took, the commitments that you made, now those circumstances don't exist anymore, and so you don't stay with that commitment. But otherwise, commitment is an important part in human life. When we break commitment, then our conscience pricks that I have told untruth, I have not said the truth. And thus our conscience pricks that I did make this commitment, but now I have not honored it, and it does make a dent in our confidence also, our conscience, and our pursuit of higher values does get dampened at least. So therefore, commitment has a place. Lord Buddha's story here is very beautiful, very illustrative. He was invited to to the wedding of one of his disciples. One of his disciples said, "Please come, Lord, you are my teacher. I want you to come to my wedding." And Lord Buddha goes there. To cut the long story short, it is after going there, he was requested to say a few words to the gathering, and he said, "It is a very holy, very auspicious occasion that the two souls are coming together, and this marriage is a very important thing that brings people together. Everybody must marry." Now, a person, Buddha, who came out of the marriage, giving up his wife and a newborn child, going to taking to the mendicant life, that person is saying everybody should get married. And as people were mostly those who in the gathering, they have taken the monastic vows. So how can they get married now? And Buddha says, everybody must get married to truth. All human beings must get married to truth. And then he brings out that very important underlying idea that unless you are married first to truth, there is no question of your making other vows. Those vows are meaningless if you are not initially taken the vow of being truthful. Yes, I will be with you all my life. This is a commitment, and that commitment is valuable to the extent I am truthful. Well, I might have said that, I don't care for it now. So you are not married to truth. And in pursuit of our religious ideals, the commitment to truth is of prime importance. And therefore, Buddha said that yes, everybody should be married to truth. Then the other marriages can survive. It is therefore it is said here that they let there be the winds of the divine, the heavens dance between you. May the heavens dance between you. This picture, you know, that analogy he will bring again here, that the two of you are together, but like two pillars. Two pillars, they are separate. And yet, they together support the roof, you see. So, love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your soul. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from the same one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone. This is the love. If it is a real love, it brings freedom and not bondage. The attachment that passes for love, that is the cause of bondage. Love is the cause of freedom. Love, therefore, there is no demands in love. And so, if there are demands, then it is not love really. That then it is bargaining. It gets into bargaining. I did so much for you and you don't do anything. Why you should at least do this much? That is then bargaining. You know, it is like two coming together to form, say, business. They come together for a business. They are business commitments. It is therefore they are not coming there out of love. But, love for profit alone is bringing them together. So, there are therefore demands. And if there is no profit, okay, you go your way, I go my way, it is. So, here, if it is the arrangement with love, then there should be no bargaining in that. And no trying to bind one another, but bring out the freedom in each other. That is, let that happen in marriage rather than pulling down each other. Marriage, let it be a means of uplifting each other rather than each constraining and restricting the freedom of others. It is very important that this idea of coming together in marriage is looked upon more closely along with spiritual values. Then he says, give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping. It is, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And send and stand together, yet not too near together. Stand together, but not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress, the pillars of the temple, you see, they stand apart. It is, if you bring them too close, then the balance of the roof will get disturbed, you see. So they are two pillars. They together hold a responsibility. Sometimes in some other places, another beautiful analogy is given that the husband and wife, the two partners in marriage, two wheels of a horse carriage. Those horse carriages, they used to have two wheels. So two wheels of the carriage. So the two wheels have to be separate. You know, they are connected together with what is it called? Axle. There is an axle that joins them. But they are two separate wheels and moves separately but together. Not that one goes to east, another goes to west. It is, they are going together, but each has its own motion. So, if one runs on a pothole, that doesn't mean the other also has to go into a pothole. So it is, they support each other and go along with each other, but they are like pillars of the temple. So it is, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow. That is also very important. The two people, they have separate abilities, separate constitutions, mentally specifically. They are mentally very different. And therefore, we must remember not to encroach upon the partner to restrict its growth. It should give encouragement to the growth. And thus, if they are too close, then their shadows will hamper the growth of each other. That is, another very important lesson in this. This it needs a quite a deep thought, this institution of marriage and human beings, why it is there and so forth. So I am not going today much deep into it, but as I suggested, please try to read that chapter from the Sri Ramakrishna and his divine play, that why a person like Sri Ramakrishna, who had absolutely no trace of any desire, a divine incarnate. It is the purity that could not be sullied by anything. It is that person, why such a person not only goes to marriage, he also tells with whom the marriage is going to happen. And throughout they live with each other, supporting each other, and yet without any physical contact. So why did he marry in the first place? When, and many who are, you know, do not understand this, they take cudgels on against Sri Ramakrishna on behalf of Holy Mother. That Holy Mother Sarada Devi, if Sri Ramakrishna wanted to live this kind of a celibate life, life of continence, why did he marry? He shouldn't have married and give so much pain and suffering to this girl. All her life, look how much she must have suffered. But that is not at all the account of Holy Mother's own feelings. She always maintained that from the first time she saw Sri Ramakrishna, a picture full of bliss has always been installed in her heart. So her own feelings are different. But then there are those enthusiasts who think that they will do justice to Holy Mother's all this the cries that she could never utter and so forth. So, but why then Sri Ramakrishna actually married? Holy Mother herself has said about it. Please, if possible, do read that chapter to understand these points in this book, The Prophet. Now, the next is children. What about children and a woman who held a babe against her bosom? Just picture before yourself, you know, a woman holding a little baby in her bosom. Said, speak to us of children. Children, we say that, well, this is the son or daughter of so and so. Here is his father, here is his mother, and so forth. They also say, the parents, that this is my daughter, this is my son, and they belong to me. And then that there is a very strong feeling that they are mine, my kids. And they are very proud of their kids. It is, and they associate their kids with all mostly non-existent great virtues and qualities. That my child is so good, so nice, so beautiful. They tell a story that two children that went to, used to go to same school. So, and then one day the mother of one, she could not prepare the lunch early enough. So she said, well, I will bring the lunch box to you. Don't worry, you go. And it so happened that somebody else also was going that way. And she said, well, why you take the trouble? I will give it to your child also. I am going anyway to give it to my child. So I will give it to your child also. But I don't exactly know your child. Can you describe your son? And this lady said, well, it is very easy. The most beautiful child in the school is my son. He is the most beautiful, most, as soon as you see, you recognize. And this other lady said, what do you mean? No, 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 I think you are mistaken. My son is the most beautiful in the whole school. So it is like that, you see. So this children is a very important thing that we feel so attached, so involved, and so possessive of the children. And thus we suffer a lot. People suffer a lot thinking that they are their children. But actually it is not so. There is, therefore, in all religions this idea is there, that they belong to God. Parents were just instruments. They never owned the children. They belong to God. They come from the God. God makes them using the parents as instruments. So, it is the God who makes them, that is taught in churches, in temples, amongst Hindus, amongst Muslims, amongst Christians. These are the common teachings that are given, that yes, it is God who makes them. So it is, of course, a nice story that it is one little child asked its mother, Mom, how did I come into existence? Who made me? And then mother said, oh, well, God made you. Is it so? Because dad was saying the other day that we come from the monkeys. And the mother thought for a while, now what is to be told? And she immediately thought, oh, you know, he was talking about his side of family. It is. So, children, my children, one becomes automatically so possessive and think that, yes, I want to make my child like this, like this, like this. In fact, a mother's imaginations, even before the child is born, go to such, the daydreaming starts. Well, he will be like this, and then he would be like, then I will do that to him. I will send him to this school, and then he will, as he grows up, that college, I have decided that he will go to that college, and he would marry such and such girl, and then I will have such and such grandchild. All, the child is yet to be born. But then all these things, it keeps on happening. So with children there is a very strong bond that exists, that they are mine. So these teachings are very important. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit. See what a strong statement. That for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. Because they have different dreams. The children's dreams are different than the parents' dream. Parents want their children to be like this, to be like this. The children have their own dreams. So even in your dreams, you cannot go to your children's dwellings. It is, they have their dreams. I remember an incident, a very funny incident. Normally, you know, especially in India, where the idea of my children, my family is very strong, oppressively strong at times. It is. So, if a boy wants to take to monastic life, normally parents, they hate this idea. They feel very miserable. They feel very sad. Somebody else's, even if they understand the respect, somebody becoming a monk, but somebody, not my son, you know, somebody else, how nice, you know, they will go and congratulate the parents also. Oh, you are so blessed, your son became a monk, a swami. But their own son, forget it. It is in many about 30 years back, more than 35 years back, there was a convention of devotees world over, about 6,000-7,000 devotees from all over the world had come to our headquarters in Belur Math. And then there was many people from different places, they kept on requesting in that convention that a center should be started in our city, our state also. And then our president then started that these are very good thoughts, and we would like to start centers in all these places. But one important requirement for that, we do not have that many monks. So please, all of you, take this vow that you will give one of your sons to become a monk. And nobody, all kept quiet then. That topic was never raised in the whole convention. So it is, because others' children, let them become, not mine. So while we were one day having this discussion in our breakfast table, one devotee was there. He said, well, if my son becomes a swami, I will be so happy. I want my son to become a swami. And soon after that boy really that came, he was about 19-20 years old then, and he came, and then we started chiding him that, hey, you see, your dad was just telling that he will be so happy if you become a monk, so come on. He said, well, what does it matter for him, you know, it doesn't cost him to say that. He had his fun in life and now wants the son to become a monk. It is, we had such a hearty laugh that this is, you know, you can give your love to your children, but not your thoughts, for they have their own. You cannot give your dreams to your children, they have their own. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. See what a reverse thing. You may strive to become like your children, but what we try to do? Reverse. Try to make your children like you. I did like this. Oh, my son or my dear daughter, you must step in my shoes now. You must also do the same thing that I did. But it is, are we not doing something reverse here? He gives the reason. For life goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. It is go forward. That is how the life goes. And therefore, and then he gives a very nice analogy here. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth, as you see in this picture, that the children, they come from the bow, say the pole of the bow is one parent, the string is another parent. So they join together and it makes a bow. And from that the arrow is shot. Now yes, the arrow is shot from that, but it does not belong to bow. It goes away from the bow. It does not be with the bow at all. And that is the fulfillment of a bow. If the arrow is put to the bow and it sticks with the bow, then it is no use of having an arrow and a bow. It has to go. And then the question is, in this, who is the archer? Who is shooting the arrow? Look at that. The archer who owns the bow and arrow, you know. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite. And he bends you with his might. Somebody has to use that bow. Put the arrow to the bow. And pulls it mightily so that it goes to the target that is far away. He bends you with his might that his arrows may go swift and far. So that is what the hands of the Almighty Archer are doing with so many bows and arrows. Let your bending in the archer's hand before gladness. We should be willing instruments, willing bows in the hand of this archer. Yes, do not, let us not claim, let us not put a possessive claim that they are my children. They must do like this, like this, like this. It becomes a very nice young man comes here, and then his father was insisting that he must marry. And then since he was not doing it, the father became very upset and then said that you are no longer my son. I don't consider yourself as my son. And so forth. And he became so upset and angry. He started discussing it with me. That look, my son, I don't consider. If he is not doing the bidding of his father, what kind of son he is, I disclaim. That so it is like that. You want to pressurize, push, feel that my son should do exactly what I tell him to do. It should not be like this. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness. It is for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable. The bow is stable, the arrow flies. the archer, both belong to the archer. You know, the bow is also archer's, and the arrow also belongs to the archer. So one goes far from the bow. It is moving something, and the other is stable something. So this is actually a beautiful imagery of stability and motion. So just think about it. And then it is the next in this is a rich man comes and says, speak to us about giving. That it is giving. And he makes a very nice, we will discuss it in our next class today, the time is over already. That giving of your possessions, that's very little. Giving of yourself, that is true giving. So, we shall look into those things next Tuesday. And conclude today's class with the closing prayers. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.